Hello, this is Michael Steve from Kaplan Financial, and in this podcast, I'm going to be talking about some of the tax aspects of making gifts. There are two headings under which I want to consider this. The first is capital gains tax, and the second is inheritance tax. I'm principally thinking about CGT here, but I will bring in the IHT where appropriate. So let's deal with the CGT aspects of gifts. And I think to make it straightforward, we'll knock it into two boxes. The first of those will be non-business gifts, and the second of these will be business gifts. Let's start with non-business gifts. There's a general rule that a gift, anybody to anybody, is a disposal, and very importantly, it's charged at market value. These are deemed disposals at market value. And we use the market value, even in effect, you sell for an undervalue. So a member of a family might give an asset to somebody and say, it's worth 200, just give me 50 for it. That is still covered by the market value imputation. Okay. That's the basic rule, but there are a couple of angles on this. The first, of course, is that some gifts are ignored for CGT, and the most important of that is the spousal stroke civil partner exemption. So if, for example, husband owned a house and he transferred it into his wife's name, she, in effect, inherits his base cost. So if he bought it for 100, and at the time of the transfer it was worth 200, and she subsequently sells it for 300, the 200 is ignored. The two parts are glued together, and when she sells, she is selling for 300, less her base costs of 100. So unless you're covered by the spousal exemption, then other gifts are charged. So if mum, for example, decides to give a house out of her portfolio and therefore not covered by the PPR to, say, her daughter, worth £500,000, then that is a disposal at market value, and mum will sadly have to pay the CGT on that. And, of course, that's very unfair. Now, I just quickly bring in the IHT angles here. Suffice to say that IHT is obviously on individuals, and it comes into play when we, in our context here, when we've got one individual making a gift to another individual. So in the example that I've just covered, that is mum gifting a house to her daughter, not only is that a disposal for CGT, but that also has an immediate IHT effect because mum is giving up part of her estate in life, but she's giving up part of her estate. Now, that is regarded as a potentially exempt transfer, which means there's no immediate tax on that. And provided mum survives the magic 7 years, there will be no tax to pay on that transfer. Remind yourself, if you would, that if mum did die within the 7 year period, then there would be IHT to pay, but it would be paid by her daughter. The burden passes to her daughter. And then you have to think about ways of mitigating that, maybe through an insurance policy. Okay, that's the IHT bit there. And that is a very quick look at what goes on in the world of non-business gifts. Of course, family-to-family gifts in most cases. But let's move on. Let's have a look at business gifts. Gifts, if you like, of business assets. And the broad rule here is that they too are chargeable, but unlike the non-business gifts, there are some reliefs available. So, if Dad, for example, gifts shares in his trading company to his son, then that will be a disposal at market value, but then the reliefs will, fortunately, kick in. These, generically, are referred to as holdover reliefs. And the way that they work is that the donor, in my example here, Dad, doesn't pay any CGT. The burden passes to the donee, who of course is the son, who will eventually pay. So the burden, the tax burden, passes from dad's shoulders to son's shoulders in my example, and therefore the gain is held over. One of the administrative points here, which is always important, is that that will need a joint claim in writing to HMRC, and hopefully for the very obvious reason that son is taking over a liability to pay some tax that otherwise would have fallen upon dad. So both parties need to agree in writing, and that must be passed to HMRC. Now, I'll be talking about the holdover reliefs in just a second, but there are some other reliefs that are given automatically and don't need holdover claims. An obvious example, of course, is a gift to a charity. A lot of us will make gifts to charities throughout the course of the year, and that will be covered by an automatic mechanism. You simply deduct it from your income. Now, I won't be mentioning those further here. I also want to mention incorporation relief under one of the two famous sections that are used for incorporation in the Taxation of Chargeable Gains Act. That's the TCGA 1992. That's section 162, incorporation relief. And just to make the point that I won't be covering that on this podcast, because that is a very specific piece of legislation, and I will be covering that elsewhere. But the main bit of law that I will be covering in this podcast is, again, in the TCGA. It's another one of these incredibly important sections. It's section 165. Section 165 of the TCGA. And it's gift relief of business assets. And also, don't forget this one, sales at an undervalue. Very often used in family companies where, say, mum's built up a business over the years, wants to hand it over to, say, her daughter, wants her daughter to pay something for it, because mum may need some money, or she wants daughter to have to fight for her inheritance, you know, the normal very good reasons. But, and section 165 will cover that as well. So section 165 covers two important things. It covers gifts, straightforward unencumbered gifts of business assets, but it also covers sales at an undervalue. I'm going to be talking about the main gift relief provisions under section 165. Okay, so what have we got here? We've talked generically about these holdover reliefs. And to my eye, there are three main areas of interest to AAT members. The first is a gift of business assets. The second is gifts of unlisted shares in trading companies. Remember, all the good things in the world happen to trading companies. And we will be dealing with an awful lot of these unlisted trading companies. And thirdly, and we won't see this too often, but it's still out there, gifts of agricultural land. So three main groups there: gifts of business assets, unlisted shares in trading companies, and gifts of agricultural land. I won't be spending any time on the gifts of agricultural land because I do want to be doing farming in a future podcast, but I just want to deal with those first two. So let's deal with them in order then. Let's try gifts of business assets. And remember, we're still under this very important section, 165. So you're able basically to hold over any gains in respect of disposal of these business assets. So what do I mean by a business asset? Well, it's any asset which is used for the purposes of a trade, professional, vocation, which is either carried on by you individually or in partnership or your personal company. Now, what do I mean by a personal company? Well, basically, the personal company of an individual is one where that individual has at least 5% of the voting rights. Now, it can be your personal company, but there may be a problem, maybe some restrictions in this relief, if that company also carries some non-business assets that would be chargeable if otherwise sold. So if you've got a company that's broadly trading, but it's got an investment property in it, you went out and bought a buy-to-let within the company, then that may give you some problems. Okay, so there you go. That's the basic shape of these holdover reliefs. Okay, now we want to just drill down now a bit into which transferors and which transferees will generally qualify. The basic rule is that these reliefs operate when you've got a gift by an individual to an individual. And the other point is that in all cases to get these reliefs, the transferee, that's the person who gets the asset, must be either resident or ordinarily resident in the UK. So we're not about to give this relief, this is HMRC speaking, to somebody who's actually, in effect, living abroad. So there you go. There's a couple of points that we need to be clear about that. And there are special rules for what happens when people die, transferees die, or indeed move abroad, and then bad things start to happen. Now, the next thing I want to deal with is what happens if you receive some payment. Because remember, we've said that in a simple world, Section 165 gives you a holdover relief. That is, the donor doesn't pay any tax, donee takes on the burden, when there is an outright gift. But it also operates when there's a gift at an undervalue, a sale at an undervalue. Let's have a look at an example. Supposing you've got Mum, who has got a trading company, and she decides to gift some shares to her daughter. But she thinks about it a bit and talks to you, the advisor, and you both decide that there are very good reasons why, instead of gifting it outright, she should make her daughter pay for it. You know, putting a daughter under a bit of pressure, making a fight for inheritance, all the things that we're all quite comfortable with. So let's say that Mum started off her company, £10,000, and it's now worth £200,000. And she's prepared to let her daughter have it for, let's say, £50,000. How does that all work for tax? Well, let's go through the numbers. Given that this is a gift, and given that the basic rule is that this has got to be a disposal at market value, then the basic gain calculation is the market value, 200, less what Mum paid for it, 10. That gives you 190. But the problem with this is that rather than saying, let's not charge Mum the 190, let's just give that to daughter and she can pay it in due course when she disposes of the asset, she's taken some money for it. So we want to make sure that there is a charge on the money. It's what I think of as the tax, the cash principle. So let's have a look at what Mum has actually received. She's received 50,000. And her base cost was 10,000. And the legislation very cleverly says, what we'll do is we'll charge you on the excess of the cash that you receive over what it originally cost you. So in other words, if you receive the 50 and it cost you 10, we'll charge you now on the 40. So the tax, the cash, we're going to charge you on 40. And therefore, the holdover, or the gain before any holdover relief, which if you remember was 200 less 10, that's 190. Rather than giving the whole of the benefit to the daughter and letting her carry the burden, then Mum is going to pay a little bit of tax now. And the holdover gain, that is the 190, is going to be reduced by the 40,000 that we're going to charge Mum. So it's the 150 that doesn't get charged, and that gets passed on to daughter in due course. So there you go. There's a few items on Section 165, which is this enormously important section. I just want to put it into context, because we did mention earlier on about Section 162, which is the great incorporation relief. Remind yourself that the Section 165 that we've been talking about essentially in this podcast is also used on incorporation. And I think most of us would agree that it's actually the better option rather than using Section 162. Section 162 is an all or nothing relief, and Section 165 is much more flexible. Section 162 requires us to pass pretty much everything except cash over to the company in order to get the relief. Section 165 allows us to cherry pick it. And as we've often recognised, that's sometimes a good thing, especially when you've got property, for example. So Section 165, it's really designed to make gifts of business assets and to enable the wealth to, as John Major famously put it, to cascade down the generations. But it is also used, and very efficiently used, for incorporation, because in effect the sole trader is gifting, or indeed selling at an undervalue, the assets from the sole trade into the newly formed company. So just to finish off this podcast, just to remind yourself about some of the administrative points here, very important that we recognise that this is a joint claim, because HMRC is saying we're only in effect letting mum off, providing we can get our hands on the loot in the future when daughter sells it. So it's got to be a joint claim. There are some forms available, although I don't think you have to use those. Those are readily available off the HMRC website. Right, well, there you go. There's a quick roundup on tax aspects of gifts. I'll look forward to seeing you and talking to you in the future. I've got a lot of podcasts coming up through the year, and I will no doubt catch up with you in the autumn. So see you soon. Cheerio.